This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
It may come as some of a shock to some of you that most of God's chosen servants spent time in prison. That's right. Most of God's chosen servants spent time in prison. At least in the Bible, we find that. Going all the way back to the Old Testament, we find Joseph, unfortunately, and through none of his own responsibility, found himself in prison. It was an unrighteous thing. Was he being persecuted or prosecuted? Well, it depends on your viewpoint, I suppose. And oftentimes, whether or not God's servants spend time in prison sometimes depends on the viewpoint of why they're there. Are they there because they're being prosecuted or persecuted? Well, we'll leave you to decide that. On the other hand, we find also the Apostle Paul having spent time in prison a number of times. We find Peter and John having spent time in prison. Yes, the angel delivered them, but the angels don't always deliver people from prison, even though they call themselves by the name of the Lord. You see, prison is a not uncommon thing for God's people to have to suffer. As a matter of fact, friend, I have five friends, five people, men across this country, that I know have spent time in prison. That's right. One of them, truly, because of his own fault and sin. There was no persecution there. It was just prosecution. On the other hand, there were at least two who were there for persecution purposes, even though it came in the name of prosecution. Why? Well, because they chose to stand for a biblical position when a woke culture decided that wasn't acceptable. And so they were put in prison because they refused to stand for a woke culture. And then there were two others across the country who suffered prison. Yes, true believers suffered prison because they were caught up in a situation where the government itself had approved a particular pattern of behavior that the government itself repudiated and brought them to prosecution. And so, today on Viewpoint, we're going to take a look at one of those situations. I hope that this time that we spend with Dan Morton today will be of some encouragement to you and help you to realize that not everybody who has spent time in prison and carries the label felon in their history is displeasing to God. In fact, there may actually be a benefit that comes. As Joseph said to his brothers, after he had become raised up to the heights of glory there in Egypt, second only to Pharaoh, he said to his brothers, "You meant it to me for evil, but God meant it for good." So, is there some pain that leads to praise? Yes, even in prison. That may be part of maybe even your life story or somebody that you know, a relative, a friend. And so today, trusting God through testing. With a longtime friend of mine, Dan Morton, we've known each other for about 55 years. But it's only recently that we were reunited by reaching out to one another, and we want to share that story with you. Dan Morton joining us from Michigan, where it's freezing cold, barely able to breathe. Dan Morton, good to have you on the program.
Well, thanks, Chuck. I'm looking forward to spending this time with you, and I'm looking forward to, with anticipation, how the Lord will use this time.
Well, so interestingly, you and I go back to California, and we were both very young, married, and we spent time together. We were in the same church together, and actually had majored in the same major, psychology, at that time. And you were working as a counselor, and I was working as a public school teacher. And after church on Sunday evenings, we'd get together for times of fellowship. It was just a great time that we enjoyed together, wasn't it?
It was. We had lots of fun, and I don't know if you're going there, but even you and I would take off on some weekends and do some mountain climbing in the Sierras, which was absolutely fantastic.
Well, absolutely, and you still have one of those ice axes, don't you?
I do. I do. And it's a great story reminder that I share with my grandkids.
Well, you know, it's interesting, after 55 years, that you can come back together as believers and you can have this warmth of fellowship. It's like just a tremendous reunion, isn't it?
It really is. It really is. And the memories that warm the soul from times 50-some years ago is fantastic.
Well, it is. And, you know, you actually are living in the place of my birth, that is Michigan. But something caused you to move from Southern California to Michigan. What happened there?
Well, it was one of those things where I had been in close fellowship with Dr. James Dobson. We attended the same church. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
He and I competed mostly against each other in basketball.
Uh-huh.
And yet had a great, great relationship. And all three of my children were born while we were in California, the last in 1974. And one time after a sweaty basketball game, I was talking with Jim, and I said, "Hey, Jim, I appreciate who you are and what you stand for, focus on the family. What would you think with me and my wife? We have three kids. We like California, but it's really not our home base. Should we live in California, or should we consider going back to the Midwest?" And without hesitation, I distinctly remember Jim saying, "Dan, are your parents, are your wife's parents, Nancy's parents, are they Christians?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Move. Get your children under the influence of your family who believe." And that was a decision that my wife and I discussed. We put out resumes, and I accepted a job in Kentwood, Michigan, as a guidance counselor in 1974.
Well, our little sojourn together was in the late 1960s, and it's interesting that when I ran for the state legislature there in California, it was that same Dr. James Dobson that came alongside me after leaving a Sunday school class and put his arm around me, and he said, "Chuck, don't forget your children." Yeah. Well, yeah. That same Dr. James Dobson was one of the very first supporters of Save America Ministries going back to 1993. And so it gives us a connection here, not only for you and I, but also for those to give a perspective of the environment that we came from. So you went to Michigan, and in Michigan, things began to change. Something inspired you into a whole new realm, and we want to talk about that when we get back from this break. We've set the stage now, trusting God through testing. We'll be right back, friends. Stay tuned. You're about to hear an amazing story.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Chrismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Welcome back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Chrismeyer. Today we're talking with Dan Morton, who is a very long-time friend, brother in the Lord, who has suffered, well, you could say, from prison to praise, from pain to praise, but it's his life story, and we're talking about it here today on Viewpoint, and how God can move through being labeled with the label of felon to actually use you for God's glory. That's what we're talking about here today on Viewpoint. As Joseph back there in the Old Testament said to his brothers, you meant it to me for evil, but God meant it for good to save many. Dan, we were just getting ready to talk about the move from California to Michigan. And when you got to Michigan, you had some sort of a counseling service there that you were engaged in. But then you got an inspiration for an element of business that you had never engaged in. What was that all about?
So it was interesting. I had been in the public school setting and within a short time became frustrated with some of the stuff I observed then in public school. And I told my wife, I said, you know, I don't think this is where I'm going to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And I left education. We prayed together. I launched a business in which I recruited and bought and sold insurance products to people.
Uh-huh.
And that led to a whole nother avenue in my life of entrepreneurship.
Mm.
And shortly, I had seen an opportunity to work in the world of leasing dairy cattle.
Wow.
That was kind of an unheard of thing at that time, but it was growing.
Uh-huh.
The marketplace in the United States was good. I will say the U.S. government was buying all excess dairy products and using those products to donate to third world countries. They used it as part of their political savvy.
Mm-hmm.
And so farmers were wanting to grow their dairy herds. And in a little bit of a quick wit, we became leasing of dairy cattle through herds, not Hertz Rent-A-Car, but through herds. And we had over 15,000 head of dairy cattle out on lease in the Midwest. I grew a company to over 70 employees.
Uh-huh.
And things changed in our life, moving from a public school educator salary to all of a sudden making some very good dollars.
And yeah.
Giving those dollars for many good causes. In fact, I'll never forget the home we lived in. At that time, we had a wonderful pool, and our church used our pool as the baptismal. And
yeah.
We would have wonderful services around that pool.
Well, you had 58 acres there. You had a lake there on the property. You had a big barn. I mean, you had the life of Riley almost.
Yeah, I didn't know Riley, but
yeah, right.
Life. Anyway, it's just a quick correction. No lake, but a flowing stream through the property, and it was a It was great. Our kids loved the horses, the motorcycles, the snowmobiles. We were blessed.
Yeah. And then life turned. And it turned over something that happened politically.
Yes, it
did. What happened?
A president that I voted for and appreciated by the name of Ronald Reagan saw the need to end the program of the U.S. government buying excess dairy products.
Uh-huh.
And that business literally changed overnight because those farmers that were leasing and had, you being an attorney, had signed contracts, but they chose to violate those contracts and, in many cases, sold the dairy cattle they didn't even own.
Wow.
Beefed them. And my business literally overnight went from very successful to completely on the rocks. It went into bankruptcy.
Mm.
I personally went into bankruptcy, my wife and I. My wife's parents went into bankruptcy because they were some of the biggest investors in our company.
Uh-huh.
And it was crazy. And that was in 1986. We had just gotten a bank loan for $2 million in 1986 for that company. And that's when rates were at 20-some percent interest.
Yeah.
They immediately wanted to collect, and I didn't have that money at that time because we were using it to grow the business.
Right.
And it was the property got sold. We moved out of that house. We closed the business, and we moved into an apartment, and I sought employment through other means. And
well, it was almost like what happened to Joseph. He had been raised up, and then all of a sudden, through false accusations and so on, found himself in prison. And, for 17 years, the Bible says, the word of the Lord tried Joseph. And you were tried terribly as a result of these events through no fault of yours. It was the government that did it, not particularly trying to persecute you, but in fact, you had the fallout that came from it. And what did that lead to, other than bankruptcy and the loss of everything?
Well, whenever you have investors, and I will say this without any hesitation, and you touch people's pocketbook,
mm-hmm.
they see that they have been, in their opinion, wrong.
Right.
I was accused of manipulating. I was accused of not giving them enough information to make decisions about their investments.
Mm-hmm.
And if I were to go back and do anything different, Chuck, and people have asked me that, I would have just pulled the plug and said, sorry, you go find your couch. Instead, I stood in the middle and tried to help solve many of those tough situations between farmer and investor.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't very successful because the farmer was ready to end his relationship with the U.S. government in that regard. Those investors then found a prosecuting attorney in Kent County, Michigan, that said, this guy took our money and he's not giving it back, even though I didn't take their money. It was the farmers. And that prosecuting attorney, now you're an attorney, but this is my own little description. A prosecuting attorney is like a really good salesman. And I've been a good salesman.
Yep.
And you got to close the deal. And when a prosecuting attorney sees an opportunity, they want to close the deal.
Well, it's like it's like turning from prosecution to persecution.
So I was charged because we used the U.S. mail to send out quarterly reports to these thousands of investors.
Uh-huh.
I was charged with several thousand counts of mail fraud.
Wow.
And each count of mail fraud represented a five-year sentence, a $250,000 fine, and whatever else they could add to it.
So for that, you were given a sentence of what?
Well, when it all came down to it, I was sentenced to 5 years in prison, and I reported to prison September 25th, 1989. So
Mm-mm-mm.
The business folded in 86. There were 3 years that I had to live, my family and I had to live and survive until that sentence was final and I had to report to Oxford Federal Prison Camp in Oxford, Wisconsin. And my kids would say to their friends at high school, yeah, my dad's off studying at Oxford. there was reality, but not the same Oxford.
Wow. And your wife, Nancy, she had to be in agony over all of this. What's happened to my godly husband? How could this possibly happen in our family when we've been serving the Lord? We've been in church. We've known some of the most godly people in the country. How could this possibly be happening to us, right?
Yep. And there were ups and downs in both of our emotions.
I'm sure.
And I must say there was a point in time where I was wondering, would it be better for my family to have my life insurance than me?
Mm.
And that was a difficult, difficult time. And yet I remember where that thought was just overpowering me. Nancy had already gone to bed one evening. I went up to bed, and as I laid in that bed, my serious contemplation was tomorrow I could drive my car into a tree. And I actually had picked a tree.
Oh, boy.
And yet in her sleep, Nancy reached over and grabbed my hand. And it was not audible, but almost. I heard Jesus say, Dan, she doesn't want the money. Your kids don't want the money. They want you.
Mm.
And at that moment, peace took over in me, and I didn't have that thought again. And
wow. Well, yes, praise the Lord for that.
I still hadn't gone to prison. I didn't know what that meant, but that came. And the story, Chuck, that weaves its way, and I like your analysis of Joseph comparison, although I'm no Joseph, but God had other plans. So while I was waiting to go to prison, I got a job. I got a job as a salesman. That man was happy. We were having success. And yet on the day I was sentenced, I called his company and I said, Gene, I'm resigning. I don't want to drag your company through my mess.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, wait, you're doing a good job. I don't want to lose you. I said, doesn't matter. But that man, a non-Christian gentleman, took care of my family. While I was in prison, he carried the health insurance for my family.
Wow.
Every one of those months that I was gone.
Wow.
He also cut my wife a check for $250. Now, I can only tell you this. The $250 didn't make sense to me at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But we had moved from that apartment. We had bought a house on a land contract. You, as an attorney, probably know what a land contract is. And that land contract holder had read in the newspaper or heard on the news that I was going to prison. He and his wife stopped by our house, the house I'm sitting in right now. And he said, Dan, what's going on? You're not a crook. Why are you going to prison? I said, I can't answer that, but I've got to do it. He said, well, my wife and I don't want your family to have to move, but we assume you can't afford the payment. And I said, I know I can't. He says, if there's any way our mortgage payment on this house at the bank where we have a mortgage is $250 a month. Now, Chuck, I don't know if you heard what I said.
I did.
But that guy that had employed me, and then I resigned, carried the health insurance for my family the whole time I was gone, and sent a check every month of $250. Wait, these guys didn't know each other.
Wow.
These guys didn't know about the deal.
Wow.
But God did.
Isn't that amazing? And, oh. You know, the story just goes on. We could spend probably 2 or 3 hours talking about how this story goes on. So you get to prison, and you're under a 5-year prison contract, so to speak.
Right.
And when you get there, they think that you're an undercover agent.
That's right, because I'm a educated white guy, and I was probably a little bit out of place in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And although there were some judges and police officers and business owners that were there.
oh, boy.
And they assigned me to the smoking wing.
Oh, lovely.
Because I was allergic to smoke. I complained that they wanted to punish me. I had a roommate by the name of Willie. And I'll always appreciate Willie, a wonderful, wonderful black man.
Uh-huh.
And Willie came to me and he says, hey, the guys here think you're working for the cops. You're trying to get more stuff on them. And he and I talked, and he was the one that took the truth out and shared it among the men who were upset that I was there.
Mm.
And the urination on my pillow, the smearing of feces in my bed stopped when Willie spread the word.
Wow.
And then Willie and I had fun. We ended up playing cards, and there's a card game in prison called Spades. And you couldn't gamble, but you could for nachos out of the commissary. And Willie and I won nachos after nachos after nachos, so much so that the Hispanics who ran the kitchen, and they were in prison, but they ran the kitchen, they had access to all the cheese. And every weekend, they would have a huge nacho party and cheese party. But they would invite me and Willie because we had the nachos.
All right. Well, after this, friends, we'll be back with Dan Morton to tell the rest of the story. Remember the rest of the story? Yeah.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, saveus.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, saveus.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived, Save America Ministries website at saveus.org.
Again, I welcome you back to Viewpoint. We're talking about from prison to praise, so to speak, life's story from pain to praise, from prison to praise, and how the lines from persecution and prosecution can be blurred so much that people would not understand how somebody, as a professing Christian, could find themselves for under a five-year sentence in prison. But indeed, that is the life story of Dan Morton, who I knew 55 years ago as a good friend in Southern California, in the same church with the same ministries and so on. Now, 20-some years after he is released from prison, we've got to find out what happened. What happened was, did God do anything in and through his life in prison, and then where do we go from there? Dan, what happened in prison then after Willie got you straightened around with the crew there? They stopped urinating on your pillow.
Well, I don't know how many people are familiar with a name of DeBarge, but Bobby DeBarge was a singer, a wonderful black singer out of West Michigan, actually. But he was in prison at the same place for drug sales. And
so was he singing for his supper there in prison?
In one sense, maybe, yes. But he was a wonderful keyboardist, musician, and I immersed myself into the chaplain's program there at the prison. And Chaplain Bruce said, "Hey, Dan, you know, if you want to get out of your room more, you could join the quartet that sings for our service on Sunday morning." And he recommended. So I said, "Yeah, I'll do that. I'm not a big singer, but I'll do it." Well, I became the one white guy with three black guys, of which Bobby ran the group.
Uh-huh.
And they changed the name of the group to the Blackbirds and the Doves. And on Sundays, we sang for the Protestant service, the Catholic service, the Pentecostal service. The Jewish service didn't want us singing in theirs.
Uh-huh.
And the very, very first time my family was able to come visit, they were allowed to attend church with me on a weekend.
Uh-huh.
And Chuck, I share this because of the impact it had on my life. And while we're sitting in that service and I'm there with my family, the pastor says, "All right, we're going to have special music by the Blackbirds and the Doves." And I stood up and went forward with these three black guys, and my family about fainted right there. We did our singing, went back, he did his sermon, I went back, waved goodbye to my family. This was October 15th, 1989. And as my family was driving away, I'm bawling, and I'm saying, "Jesus, how can my family see Jesus in me standing in prison?"
Wow.
I went to my room, filled my pillow with tears. I grabbed my Bible, and I plopped it on the bunk, and it opened up, not to some scripture, but to the back of my Bible, which is sitting in front of me right now on my desk, to the map. And I said, "Jesus, please help me." And I looked down, and on the blank, wasn't blank page anymore, next to the map was a note. And here I'm reading, October 15th, 1989. "Father, I always enjoyed finding the little notes when I least expected it. I hope you don't mind this. I just can't stop telling you how much I love you and that my goal in life is to image God, thus imaging you. I do love you. Mm. And when you get a new Bible, I'd be privileged to inherit this. Have a great day. Love your son. That was my oldest son.
Wow. Kurt.
And while I was up singing in the Blackbirds and the Dove, my Bible was left back on the chair in that chapel. And he had taken that and written that note. And God knew I needed that.
Mm.
He had already planned it, even though before I was crying and saying, how can it be?
Wow.
And Chuck, God's miracles served me and my family in so many different ways. I'm backtracking a little bit here, but before I reported to prison, while I had this other job from the man I resigned from, when I resigned, I still needed a job because prison wasn't going to start for several months. I went to the health club where I had been a member for years, and it was a nice health club. And I said, Jim, I said, can I do something at the health club? I need it for mental therapy. He said, do you want to do laundry? I said, I'll do laundry. You want to mop floors? I'll mop floors. So I began doing laundry and mopping floors at the health club, still getting to work out. One day, I got this is the old intercom method. The intercom buzzed. I was in the laundry room, and Jim says, hey, Mort, what are you doing? I said, I'm doing laundry. He said, drop the laundry. I've got one of my best customers. He's here to play racquetball, and his partner isn't going to make it today. So go play racquetball. I dropped the laundry, went and played racquetball. I didn't know this guy. His name happened to also be Jim. We played. The next time he came to the club, he didn't even ask his partner. Instead, he went right to the owner of the club and said, hey, that Mort guy, I want to play racquetball with him again. So I got the buzz on the intercom. I played racquetball again. We did that multiple times.
And who was this guy?
Jim Bruno owned a company here in Grand Rapids, Michigan, a injection molding company. He has since passed away. He, not a Christian man, but we enjoyed playing racquetball. One day after the game, setting, having a Diet Coke, Bruno says, Mort, what is going on? I read the newspapers. You're not a criminal. Why are you going to prison? I said, don't know, Jim. He reached in his pocket and gave me his card. He said, if you ever need anything, call me. I said, I took his card. I said, I know right now. In prison, I don't have a car that my wife can drive from Grand Rapids, Michigan, around through Chicago, up to Wisconsin to come visit me. He grabbed his card back, wrote his personal number on it, and said, Dan, if your wife ever needs a car, have her call me. For the 2 years and 2 months that I ended up doing prison, because the judge reduced my sentence from 5 to 3 years. With good time, I got out 2 years, 2 months. Jim Bruno provided a car for my wife every trip. And whenever she went out to park the old Buick wagon we had and pick up the keys, on the front seat of that car, usually a new car, was an envelope with several $100 to pay for the gas and the food for my wife and family to come visit me.
So God provided even through a prosecution that really functioned more like persecution, that came through no fault whatsoever of yours, but was due ultimately to changes of government policy that took you down.
Yep.
Unbelievable. And it's so much like what happened to Joseph there in the Old Testament. And he went from agony to ecstasy, back to agony and back to ecstasy, until God, through it all, had brought him to the place of his ultimate purpose, which was to be second in command there in Egypt, to provide a place of welcome for God's chosen people, Israel, in their time of need. So that leads you and me to the rest of the story, i.e. Paul Harvey, you know, the rest of the story. What a great guy he was. And God, after you were released from prison began to open up some new opportunities and new vision for you. And I would really like to hear what God did in that process, because I'm looking at a note you sent me that there was a new life in ministry that opened up for 20 years, mentoring over 300 engaged and newly married couples. That's a lot of people, Dan. How did all this happen? From a prisoner with a felon over his head.
So I'm home from prison, back to the old church. There were still people that were upset. In fact, there was one family that had cursed me in church.
Mm.
And being home from prison, someone in the church saw me as a viable, possible leader again. They nominated my name for the board. We had a new pastor. I really didn't know him.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter, who was helping launch another new church in town, she was on the worship committee. We had begun to attend both of these churches so we could support our daughter and also go to our old church.
Mm-hmm.
And the new church my daughter was at, that pastor had asked my wife and I if we'd be interested in mentoring engaged and newly married couples. And I said, I'd love to do that, but the old church is just now starting to look at me as a possible, and I think there's some healing taking place, so I don't think I could leave unless there's that finger right on the wall that says you got to leave. And so I'm at our old church. I'm leaving on a Sunday evening. My wife has already gone to the car. This new pastor says, hey, Dan, you got a minute? I got to talk to you. I stepped in his office. He closed the door, and he said, Dan, I just want you to know, as long as I'm pastor here, you will never lead in this church again. I said, wow, I appreciate you being frank with me. I got up, walked to the car, opened the door, and I said, Nancy, the writing of the finger was just on the wall.
Mm.
We left that old church we'd been a part of since 1974.
Wow.
And moved to this new church where my daughter was working on the worship team. And we're immersed into this ministry for 20 years plus with over 300 engaged and newly married couples. And Chuck, every one of those couples are heard the same story you're hearing today. And we were able to share how God is faithful and he still is doing miracles to this day. And I don't want to leave the story hanging out there, but that man that cursed me in church, in that new church, his wife was there.
Wow. We'll talk more about that when we get back from this break. Friends, the rest of the story is still being told. Dan Morton, a dear friend, how God used him, trusting God through testing.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they love one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Trusting God through testing. Troubled times. Everybody goes through some kind of testing, but not all testing is the same. Some people are tested within an inch of their life, as Dan Morton has said here. where he wondered whether his life was even worth anything anymore. Maybe it'd be better if I don't exist anymore. Maybe it would be better for my family. But then the Lord said no. Apparently God has a plan and a purpose that we don't always understand. We don't see the end from the beginning. But God sees the bigger picture. And he sees how even through some of these troubled times, even if it's through no fault of our own, that he can still use that testing for his glory. And that's what we want to communicate here today for the balance of the program with Dan Morton there in Michigan. Our 55-year journey through life has put us in various different places. I remember Dan, never been in prison, never been accused of anything like that. But I do remember back in the 1980s when the United States government, through Congress, decided that the interest rates were so high and people were not willing to make investments. There was no cash flowing. So the government, through Congress, actually set up a plan to encourage people to invest money in very risky kinds of businesses that otherwise they might not be willing to support in order to get money out there into the economy. And what they did was to say, okay, if you will make this investment, we will allow you to take two or three times the value of that investment and deduct it on your taxes.
Yeah, investment tax credit.
That's exactly what they did. And so Christian people, and I could name some of them, Christian people actually opened up businesses in that regard, and I made a couple of investments in that regard through Christian Brothers. Well, the unfortunate thing is one day I received a notice from the IRS. Pay up. We don't accept your deduction. In fact, we're going to charge you interest and penalties now because you didn't pay when it was due. Well, it wasn't due. Congress had given the authority to make these investments, but the IRS, through internal regulations, decided to add an additional requirement, and that was, if you didn't make a profit, we're going to disregard your investment. That forced me not to go to prison, but it forced me to have to take a massive loan out on my residence in order to pay up that which they were not entitled to under Congress's law, and yet they had created a situation that it would be almost impossible to defend against. I know what exactly you have gone through, the pain, yep. and it was unrighteous what the IRS did, but they did it, and a lot of people were caught in that trap. And so it's unfortunate that these kinds of things do happen. The question is, how do we emerge from these things? Do we emerge with bitterness and resentment that haunts our lives forevermore? Or is there a way to recover so we are not going to allow ourselves to dig that that terrible pit of unforgiveness and all of the things that defile our lives? How did you survive out of that?
Well, Chuck, I want to answer your question, but I want to finish. At that new church, the wife of this one really ugly investor saw me one day, and I thought, oh, no, we're going to have another disruption.
Uh-oh.
Instead, she came over weeping and gave me an embrace and said, isn't it wonderful that God forgives us for the way we are, the way we behave? And she embraced and said, I am so thankful Jesus forgives us. And we embraced. I needed that closure from that ugly moment. Now, going back to the tax credits and all those kinds of things, yes, when my business failed, Nancy and I were the largest investors in our business, so we lost everything. Well, the tax world, they said, well, those tax credits you applied for, you no longer get. So on this house that we bought on land contract, they filed a lien of $50,000 of back taxes that I owed. I couldn't pay it. I couldn't even borrow the money to pay it.
Right.
And yet one of those classes where my wife and I were giving information and instructing and loving and sharing Jesus to newly married, young married, and engaged couples, one of those classes had a man that worked for the IRS. He became ill. He was dying of cancer. I don't know to what level he was at in the IRS, but I do know I had visited him in his home where he was dying of cancer, and I had recently gotten a letter from the IRS that said all of that back tax was erased. I went to this man in his, where he was at in his dying bed, and I said, Art. He looked at me and said, Dan, it's taken care of. It's taken care of. Don't worry about it. We can't talk about it.
Mm-mm.
And Chuck, that's a God moment. A God moment. Art died shortly thereafter. But God, again, took something that had been over our head, a weight around us, and removed it. And I love telling these stories, and thank you for this opportunity, because I want people to hear the goodness of God. He is always working for his kingdom if we will share our story.
And one of the things, Dan, that I, to Kathy and I pray together in the mornings, and I quote the Apostle Paul when he said that it is God who is working in and through us both to will and to do of his good pleasure. We don't always recognize it. We don't always understand it. We don't always connect the dots until much later. But you're connecting dots here so that people who maybe have gone through some very difficult times, maybe you still are, who can be encouraged and strengthened and know that it is God who is working in and through us both to will and to do of his good pleasure. So 300-plus couples that you and Nancy counseled with, and who knows whether the IRS itself forgave that obligation because of the intervention of your friend Art, or whether he himself paid it off. We do not know. But what we do know is that God worked in and through the situation.
That's
and
right.
Is still working. You know, I'm thinking.
Right.
I'm thinking about the song Andre Crouch and the Disciples back there in the 1970s in California. They gave us a song that became very popular. Through it all, through it all, I've learned to trust in Jesus. I've learned to trust in God. Through it all, I've learned to depend upon his word. What say you, Dan?
I say God is always, and I think C.S. Lewis said, when you walk into the room and realize that God is light, you then realize how much better you can see everything around you because of that light. And these are things that I've shared that at the time there was darkness, but in the light of God's presence, God has been working in every situation.
Is he still working?
Yes, and many of those couples have come back, and I say this with great love, but my wife passed away a little over 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The place was packed for her memorial from couples that had been a part of our ministry. Some flew in from California, some flew in from Texas, and they talked about how God used me and Nancy and our lives in their life with their families, their marriage. And all I can say is praise the Lord.
Absolutely. From prison to praise. So your kids, how have they responded to all of this? What's the residue of all of this experience in their lives?
Well, I'll jump right up to my grandkids. My kids were children in high school. So I had no grandkids at that time, but now I have 12.
Wow.
And
you're the father of many nations.
That's right. They don't know that story. So I've had the opportunity on several occasions to pair up cousins and take them, cousins that are my grandchildren, mm-hmm. and take them on a trip. And that's when I tell them this story, Chuck, because I want them to hear how God has taken care of me, Nancy, our family, through the times of difficulty. And it's been cool for me to hear my grandchildren say, at 3 o'clock in the morning, we're setting at one place over in Israel where I took two of them, and they're sitting there saying, we don't want to go to bed. We've got more questions. And they would ask question after question after question, and I could say, Jesus, Jesus, Jesus took care of us in every way.
Mm-mm-mm. So the story goes on.
Yes.
The rest of the story is yet to be told, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
So, Nancy, your wife passed 3 years ago. What are you doing today, Dan?
I actually lead a small group, and tonight I'm taking that same list of items that I sent you about this story,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sharing that with this small group that I'm talking to.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I was able to do with you today, I'll be able to do parts of this again this evening. And we meet every Wednesday. And it's been so wonderful and blessing to me when people lean in and say, and God took care of you, didn't he? He certainly did. And he'll take care of you if you allow him to have your life and allow it to be used for his kingdom.
Dan, I think one of the greatest things that God is trying to get the attention of those who profess his name today is to trust him.
Yep.
I mean, we're entering times that are going to be exceedingly trying. I'm not sure if you knew that I had just written a book called When Persecution Comes, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times. But these are times that are going to require a level of trust that most Christians have never experienced, never comprehended. How do you trust God in perilous times?
You let him, and I'm going to say, a pastor in California, Pastor Earl Lee, talked about commit, trust, delight, and rest.
Psalm 37.
The cycle of victorious living. That became a mantra of Nancy and me, that everything gets committed to him, we turn it over and trust him, and we even begin to praise him before we know the results and the outcome, and then rest. And then there's that footnote in Psalm 37, fret not.
Yeah.
That's the hard part, Chuck.
Fret not yourself because of evildoers. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what's interesting that you should bring that up, and that is that became an entire chapter in my latest book, When Persecution Comes.
Awesome.
Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times. Talk about a wrap up there. That's a wrap, I'll tell you. Dan, thanks so much for joining us here. I'm giving you a holy hug over the airwaves here. 55 years of reunion to hear God's story in and through your life. And friend, you might want to just tell others about this particular program. If it encouraged you, you might know somebody that desperately needs encouragement from this story. Go to the website, saveus.org. Tell people how to connect in. They can pick it up via a podcast and so on. And also, you might want to seriously consider getting a copy of that book, Preparing Hearts for Perilous Times When Persecution Comes. $25 right there on the website, saveus.org. You're writing to us at $6 for postage and handling. God bless and be a blessing.
Thanks, Chuck.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.